Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Good morning, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. I hope everyone is having as glorious a morning as I am, sitting in my Florida room slash broadcasting studio, looking out over my lake on this beautiful, beautiful, sunny Florida morning. Boy, it makes me feel good to be alive. So we got a topic that's really important to me, really thinking twice about adopting a working breed, meaning a working dog breed, and there are several kinds, and I'm not referring to seeing eye dogs like Labrador Retrievers. I'm referring to dogs that work, that have a number of, let's say, quote-unquote, jobs, right? And that would include a whole swath of different breeds. There's herding breeds, there's sled-pulling breeds, there's guard dog breeds, there's military dogs. So I want to get into all that because, really, I have nothing against these breeds. Some of the greatest dogs I know and have had the privilege to be their veterinarian are these breeds. I've had a Border Collie mix that was one of the most amazing dogs I ever had, and that's a herding breed. And so, you know, I just see so many epic fails with people not understanding what they're getting themselves into. And it really, when these dogs are just so unruly and so difficult to deal with, and it's not the fault of the dog, it's the fault of the owner not really knowing what needs to be done. So stay tuned. I got an email from Alyssa from Flagstaff, Arizona, and she is she sent in a message here that is about my favorite topic, CCL tears in dogs. Most anybody who's read my stuff or visited my websites knows that I'm kind of obsessed with repairing canine knees, most especially the CCL tear. And that the CCL is a cranial cruciate ligament. It's the equivalent of the ACL or intercruciate ligament in people, and damage to it causes gross instability. So let's jump into Alyssa's email, and then we'll get into our topic. Again, you emailed the right guy here because I absolutely love this topic. And so hopefully I can offer you some perspectives. Hi, Dr. Roger. I have a 10-year-old Anatolian Shepherd who has a ruptured CCL. He's otherwise extremely healthy and still very active, even with lameness in his left leg. I keep my dogs up to date on their vaccines, yearly exams, and dental cleanings, and engage them in regular physical and cognitive exercise. Of course, lately with his lameness, walks have not been or have been much shorter. He has been wearing a custom-fit knee brace over the past few months and did show some improvement, but it seems to have plateaued now, and I'm considering surgery. I saw the video you posted about the MMP and was very intrigued. I've heard of the TPLO as well, and after watching videos and reading about both procedures, I can see why you favor the MMP. I'm told that the vet in my town who was able to do the surgery for ruptured CCLs does the TTA Rapid. When I looked up videos of that one, it looks the same or at least similar to MMP. Are they the same thing? I'm not able to find a reliable answer to that when searching online. I will be scheduling a consult with this vet over the next few weeks and just want to be able to go in and ask well-informed questions before deciding if I want to go through with the procedure or if I should run away and try somewhere else. I would certainly appreciate any advice you have. Also, I was wondering if you have ever considered doing an episode on canine rehabilitation. I myself am an acute care physical therapist for humans and have always been intrigued by the canine rehab world. My regular vet is certified in it, and I'm told human PTs can be too. She told me her courses had a mixture of vets and PTs and that each discipline learned from the other. Pretty cool. I've taken both my dogs to see her, and I'm fascinated both how veterinary medicine, physical therapy practice can be intertwined. I might just be a nerd, but I think it would be a great topic for people to learn more about the well-being of their pets with orthopedic and neurological conditions. Just my two cents. Thank you for all you do to improve the quality of life for people's furry family members, both in your practice and through your podcast, Alyssa Flagstaff, Arizona. Wow, very good email. Yeah, that is a great topic, and I'm going to entertain doing that in the near future, and I'll certainly shoot you an email, let you know when that episode is upcoming, because it is a fantastic field of veterinary medicine. I have sort of a symbiosis with a canine, well, canine and feline certified rehab doctor down in Vero Beach. And we our practices are an hour apart, but, you know, still people see the value of, you know, she tries to rehab them, you know, potentially out of the need for surgery. Sometimes she's successful, sometimes she's not. It really depends on the degree of the injury, how chronic and whatnot. And when the rehab doesn't get them to where she thinks they should be, she sends them to me. I repair them, send them back to her for the post-operative rehabilitation. So rehabilitation to me is extremely important, and it really goes hand in hand with a lot of what I do because I have a special interest in orthopedics. So let's talk about the CCL tear, essentially. It's the CCL is actually more important to the dog than the ACL is for people. And we all know that tearing an ACL is not fun for a person and often requires the person to go for surgery, especially if they're a particularly active person. So if you think about the conformation of the dog, they actually stand on their toes, right? So their heels are up in the air and their femurs are at 45 degrees to their horizontal. So stand on your toes and bend over, approximating the stance of a dog, and take a few steps. You're going to feel a lot of strain on your knees. And if you had a ruptured ACL, you would probably fall. So a dog is always engaging its knees, always, just standing. As long as they're standing, they're engaging their knees. And that's why a lot of dogs don't just limp with CCL. Literally, when they're standing, you can see they're sort of holding it up and kind of toe-touching with that foot. When they go to sit, we do a test called the sit test, literally the sit test, to gauge their what they do in response to being told to sit. And as they're sitting, because that tibia is so unstable and jutting forward and creating bone-to-bone contact with the femur above it, as they're sitting, they'll usually jut their leg out laterally, kind of hang it, you know, to the lateral aspect of the body, and then push it out forward. And what they're essentially trying to do is take the strain off the knee as they're going to sit. And like I said, it's literally called a sit test, one of the tests that I do to assess the potential presence of a CCL tear. So you have an Anatolian Shepherd. So you got a big dog. This is a good-sized dog, and so these dogs are almost invariably going to need to have these repaired in one fashion or another. So you had talked about the MMP. The MMP stands for Modified MACKAY Procedure, and essentially what we're doing is it's hard to do this without my models and props, but I have a video out there, and I would encourage anybody who's interested in learning more about what I do, just Google Roger Welton MMP, and there's like actually two videos floating around out there that kind of explain it with models. But we make a cut in the proximal aspect of the front part of the tibia. It's called the tibial tuberosity. And we kind of rock that bone forward, and then we insert a spacer wedge. And in doing so, when we move that bone forward, that's called tibial tuberosity advancement. And what we're accomplishing there is we're creating tension across the big, strong patellar tendon, which is super, super thick, and stopping the forward movement, making it essentially so the dog doesn't need a CCL anymore. A very effective procedure. So Alyssa, had talked about the TTA. Well, tibial tuberosity advancement really essentially is sort of the early incantation of the MMP, because it's essentially accomplishing the same thing. It's moving that bone forward, thereby creating tension on the patellar tendon and stopping the forward movement of the tibia. You're utilizing the dog's own anatomy basically to fix another issue. You're altering the anatomy, but of course it makes it so that once it's completely healed, dog doesn't need a CCL anymore, which is amazing. So yes, TTA rapid is a good procedure. It's you could think of an MMP as essentially being a screwless TTA. And that's why I really like it. So when you look at the video versus the rapid TTA, rapid TTA has a cage that goes in, and the cage has it accommodates several screws on each side. So a bunch of screws need to go in. And so by virtue of that, the procedure takes longer. It's probably about 2.5 hours to complete a TTA rapid. And then the cage doesn't really fill that space that's created when the cut in the bone is made and move forward. There's a big V there, and the cage doesn't really accommodate much, and so that's all got to fill in with bone over time to fully heal, and so, you know, the heal times are fairly long. You're talking about 10 to 12 weeks before you're letting that dog off leash to go chase squirrels. The MMP is, because it's a couple differences with the MMP. So instead of a cage, there's a titanium wedge that goes and fills the entirety of the space. So you know, there's no like empty air in there, number one. Number two, the wedge is, it's titanium, but it's microfenestrated. So it's got all these little holes in it that it makes this wedge sort of feel like it's rough, like almost like pumice stone. And the reason all those little microfenestrations are in the titanium is so tendrils of bone can grow through it. Whereas, you know, traditional implants, bone has to grow around them. And so you're looking at much faster healing times by virtue of that. Honestly, like 6 weeks, dog's done usually, off leash and getting back to their normal life. You know, a rehab person could be very helpful in the aftermath of that, whatever procedure you choose to regain that muscle. But as far as the instability and the possibility of postoperative complications, once we get to 6 weeks with the MMP, you know, you're looking at, you're done. Nothing bad could happen to that knee. Now you just got to focus on building that muscle back, which just use and good PT is going to do that. So I've been really happy with it. I do about 3 of them a week on average. Sometimes I'll have 4 or 5. I get referrals from all over, even from out of state. I don't know why more doctors are not doing MMP. It came over from Europe like maybe about 9 or 10 years ago. Ironically, I got trained in Phoenix, Arizona, not too far from Flagstaff, where I don't know if there was any reason, particular reason why the training session was done in Phoenix. Maybe that suggests there's other doctors in the state of Arizona that are doing the MMP. Maybe worth taking a look. I would Google OrthoMed United States and go to their website, perhaps give them a call and see if they know of any practitioners in the Flagstaff area within a reasonable driving range for you that perform the procedure. The company would know who they're selling implants to, who's done the training and whatnot. But TTA is still very good. It's going to take a little bit longer to get you there. It accomplishes essentially the same thing. Real quick, I didn't mention how we, because there's no screws, how do we keep the wedge in there and everything together? Well, the wedge has a hole in the middle of it, and it accommodates a pin. So I drive a pin through the front part of the tibia through the wedge, and basically it compresses the wedge. And then I bend the end of the pin up to be flush with the bone. And then on the bottom part of the bone cut, called an osteotomy, I drill 2 little holes and pop a staple there. And so we're not messing around with screws. So, but if rapid TTA is the only option you got, you know, I still think it's a very good procedure. It's just, it's longer operative time than the MMP, and the healing time's a bit longer, about 4 to 6 weeks longer to get to the end product. So thank you for your email. Again, I could go on and on about knees, so I'm going to leave it at that and move on to working dogs. Thank you for the email. Really appreciate it. So working dogs, you know, as I said, some of the best dogs I have met and had the privilege to work with are you know, working breed dogs, and that would be you know, border collies, Australian shepherds. I'm trying to think of other herding breeds, collies, and then on the sort of working dog, military/police dog side, German shepherds, Belgian Malinois. Our local sheriff, he uses bloodhounds. Those are pretty neat. His favorite bloodhound's named Junie, and she's quite famous in our county. But bloodhounds could be considered another working dog. And then you got your Spitz breeds, which, you know, the probably the most well known of those is the Siberian Husky, and they're sled pulling dogs. And people are familiar with like the Iditarod and that whole tradition. And it's a sport, of course, but it's also the means by which the Inuit people of the Arctic, up in the Arctic Circle, acquire transportation. You know, essentially, they have snow on the ground most of the year, and that's a great way to travel long distances to you know, be able to interconnect their tribes and whatnot. And I took an anthropology course in college, I remember, back in the day, and it was just fascinating how important that aspect that those dogs were to these people, to interconnect the different tribes and be able to go to different hunting areas and feed their families when they had to pack up and move because hunting was scarce and they had to go somewhere else or perish. So, I mean, such an amazing aspect of dogs that we've sort of selectively bred them to do these jobs, and it's great. But here's the thing. Always remember the two terms, working dogs. As I said, some of the best dogs I know are working dogs. Many of the worst dogs I know are also working dogs. Understand the breed. Understand what you're getting into. Don't look at a Siberian Husky and be like, oh, that's cool. It looks like a wolf. I'm going to get that. No. If you do that, not going into it, not knowing what you're doing, not getting the proper training, not spending the right amount of time with the dog, they can make your life an absolute misery and that of your veterinarian, because some of the worst patients I have are Siberian Huskies. They're unruly. They're willful. They're hard to work with. Many of them have to be muzzled, and they're just awful, right? And ask any veterinarian, when you see Husky, Siberian Husky on, like, you know, the file, and you're like, oh, God, you know, kind of bracing myself for this appointment because I'm already judging the fact that that's probably more likely than not going to be not a good dog to work with. And unfortunately, 80% of the time, it's true. And if you have a Siberian Husky, that's amazing. Don't be offended. You probably know what you're doing. You probably went into the purchase and adoption of that dog knowing what you're getting into, and you got them trained properly, and you as a result, you have a very good dog and not the ones that I'm talking about. Another one, German Shepherds. German Shepherds are, again, some of the best dogs I know, and many, many, many of the worst dogs I know. I have two Shepherds that come into my clinic that literally I have to knock them out with Domator so I can, you know, simply do an annual wellness visit on them. And you know, I guess at home they're much better, but they, you know, they didn't get the training they needed clearly. And so when they're in a setting where they have to be, you know, made to do things that they don't necessarily want to do, like sit still, like enable us to trim their nails and draw some blood and give an exam even, right? It's amazing. So this lady that adopted these Shepherds, you know, she's got to spend a bloody fortune because she's got to bring them in two to three times a year, because the nails need to be trimmed. They also have really bad allergies, and so the skin needs to be treated, and they need their various meds. And so 2 to 3 times a year, she's got to pay to have these massive dogs sedated. And so, you know, her veterinary bills are pretty big. And I really think that everything could have been very different had she attained like professional training for these dogs, because they're not like aggressive, but they're just absolutely so fearful and skittish and crazy that it's like a bucking bronco trying to work with these animals, and you just can't do it. And they're over 110 pounds each, so they're very big animals. And yes, they may resort to fear biting when they're that scared. So my concern isn't necessarily the aggression, but it's more like the absolute terror these dogs experience when they're outside of their home. Belgian Malinois are probably worse than Shepherds. As far as their potential to go down a dark path and not be good dogs. Again, though, one of my favorite patients is a Belgian Malinois. This owner is a phenomenal lady who knew what the heck she was doing. And this dog's name is Jack. And, you know, Jack, he's been a big, gentle, giant gentleman since the first time I ever met him, I want to say about 4 years ago. And she's just got him so well trained and just an amazing dog. On the flip side of that, I nearly got killed by a Belgian Malinois because as soon as I walked in the room, the dog lunged and went at me, and the person didn't rein in the leash quickly enough, and damn near went for my jugulars. And like, I backed out of the room like just in time, and I just felt the wind of its mouth clamping down. It literally would have killed me had it connected or come pretty darn close. So that's the flip side and the dark side, and that can get people killed. So I actually have a friend who's a federal cop up at the Cape Canaveral, the NASA station. where all the rockets are launched here in the Space Coast. And so he's got a working dog, and it's a Belgian Malinois, and he loves his working dog, and he's a professional law enforcement canine handler, and he actually trains other handlers to handle. So this guy knows what the heck he's doing. You know, so of course we have a man that does this for a living. He has told me, I don't believe Belgian Malinois should be pets. I think they're a danger to society. I absolutely love my Malinois and my team of Malinois that I have up at the Cape, but they are so on a knife's edge, these dogs, that people just don't understand what they're getting into, and they don't have the wherewithal, or sometimes the I guess vision in seeing the necessity of getting the best high level training you could possibly get for this breed of dog, because you better start training that dog right out of the gate and know what the heck you're doing. Otherwise, you know, you could have a very dangerous result. Herding breeds. Now, herding breeds are a lot of fun. They, you know, if they're properly trained, again, could be amazing dogs. But hey, these dogs herd animals. That's in their genome to do that. They require a lot of exercise. They require a lot of work that you must put into them, again, or they will make your life absolutely miserable and that of your veterinarian, I promise you. So we're talking about Aussies are very popular. Border Collies, very popular. Phenomenal dogs in the right hands. In the wrong hands, some of the worst patients I have that are, you know, literally peeing, pooping, and flipping out, got to be muzzled, sometimes sedated, because when they're made to do something they don't want to do, and they have not been directed in the right way with the right leadership, they can be very, very difficult dogs. Another one, Australian cattle dogs. You know, really, really, really cool dogs. I know I got a friend who's got two of them, that these are two of the most amazing things you'll see. You watch these dogs and how they just like hang on every word and how delightfully trained they are, and you think to yourself, man, I'd love to have one of those. But don't do it unless you are willing to put the work in. And I think that's a common theme with all of these breeds is, listen, go there if you really have a passion for it, but know what the heck you're doing. I have a client, a longtime client. She's very into agility training. And so she's got Border Collies. And every Border Collie, God, I've been seeing Lynn for probably, I want to say 17 years. Like almost the entire time that I've been actually working in the state of Florida. And so we've been through a few of these dogs, right? You know, I'm at that point in my career where some people are on like dog number three in my tenure as a veterinarian. And so I'll tell you, every one of her dogs have come from different breeders, have come from different areas of country. Every one of them have been absolutely perfect. Like I don't even need a technician to restrain one of these dogs for me to give them exams. And that's been every one of her dogs. And they've come from all over, so they're not genetically related. What's the common denominator? Lynn is. Lynn is a phenomenal trainer. She actually does agility with them. It's a passion of hers. And that's the result. Now, had they not had Lynn, I'd like to know how some of their litter mates turned out that maybe ended up with people who happened to watch the Incredible Dog Challenge on ESPN or were like, ooh, I would love to get a Border Collie. and that's how they got introduced to the herding breed. I'd just love to know how some of them turned out because Lynn's are all absolutely perfect. So that's a big cautionary tale I want to leave you with today is, you know what you're getting into. Understand that these dogs were all bred for a purpose and get professional training right out of the gate. It will make your life better. It will make the dog's life better. You know, dogs, when they're unruly, when they are behaving in some of the ways I described in this broadcast today, they're doing so because they lack confidence. They lack the right leadership, and so they're confused. They don't know the right way to act. Everything is a lot more frightening to them because they weren't reined in the proper way. These guys are looking for a job that requires leadership. So you need to be their leader, and don't, you know, watch an episode of Caesar Milan and think you're going to be an expert. No, you need to know somebody who knows what the heck you're doing. You need to somebody with national certifications. I'm going to leave you with this. My girlfriend and I adopted a dog recently, a rescue, and we just got him because he's so flipping cute, and he was just had this great, friendly, sweet demeanor, and we named him Alvin. And so everything was seeming to go well, but as Alvin got a little bit older, he's about a year old when we adopted him back in September of 2022, he was starting to become leash aggressive, which we found really weird because both my dogs go to Dogtopia, which is a doggy daycare right next door. And he's you know, we leave him there for the day while we're working, and with him and my lab Stella, and he's amazing. He's playing great with all the dogs. They're having a blast. He's got no aggression whatsoever towards the other dogs. And yet when we were bringing him home and walk around the neighborhood, which we're big dog walkers, we love walking our dogs, it was starting to become embarrassing because he's flipping out so badly every time he saw another dog, to the extent he'd be like diving, trying to dive through his collar, and like he would like, my girlfriend would hold her ground and not let him go, of course, obviously, but he would like choke himself and fall on the ground, and like it was getting really bad, and we're like, you know, we don't want to be people that have a dog that can't, you know, go outside for Christ's sake, you know, like this is I got a dog, so I love to walk, and it's a beautiful neighborhood, and I don't want to have my dog confined to the backyard. We went out and we seeked out professional training. And what this trainer explained to us was that, yeah, there's a really important reason why your dog acts the way he is. First of all, we showed her his DNA profile. We didn't know what he was. He's such a Heinz 57, but a significant part of his breeding is Australian cattle dog. He's got some German Shepherd in him, about 26% there. One other working breed? I forget. There's another working breed that went into his genome, and he's got a little bit of lab and a little bit of the last 15% was super mutt, unrecognizable because he's so mixed. But at any rate, she said that with the working breeds, they can be very challenging on the leash because when they're off leash, there's nothing reining in their reaction to the other dogs. So when he's at Dogtopia and having a great time and not acting the fool, he's letting his own body language feed off the body language of the other dogs. There's all kinds of communication going on between the dogs, and it's beyond just vocalizing. It's posturing. They even emit certain smells when they're feeling a certain way, and all kinds of communication going on. And so when dogs are on a leash and they don't have the ability to react to the other dog's body language because of they're in the confines of a leash, it can be tormenting to some dogs, and that's where the leash aggression comes from. Other than that, he does not have an aggressive bone in his body. He's the gentlest, sweetest thing. So that stated, we got this trainer, and so what she taught us to do, among many things, I mean, the little gentleman that this dog is becoming, it's just beyond measure the difference in just like less than a month's time. But as far as the leash is concerned, she trained us to use a prong collar. In order to make sure his attention is always on the person walking him. Usually it's Jill, my girlfriend. And, you know, it started off where we would just pinch him every now and then when he would lose his attention and, you know, be distracted by another dog walking by. But little by little, you know, Jill would just turn direction, and he knew he had to follow. He had to keep that prong collar, kept his attention strongly on Jill. And yes, it caused a yelp every now and then, but now he almost never needs to be corrected, and that's how far we've come. I really wish we'd have known right out of the gate that we were going to have this issue, because the training could have saved us a lot of aggravation and embarrassment in our neighborhood. So, but people have even noticed, like people that were walking by, they used to see him go insane from across the street even, and that they're seeing him walk now, they're like, wow, he's doing great. What gives? And we're like, oh, no, we just got some professional training. We just got, you know, tired of the behavior, and here we are. So seek help. Honestly, I could not have accomplished what I have accomplished with Alvin via a YouTube video or a TikTok video. No, we really needed this lady coming in, instilling all of the techniques, then coming back a week later, and then we introduce a new discipline, and we review the old one to make sure that we've completed the goals that we need to complete. And, you know, it's really a great experience, and it's really bonded us even further to Alvin. It's amazing that he just seems like he's a happier dog. And that will apply to every one of these working breeds. An unruly dog that lacks leadership is not a truly happy dog. No, you know, that's just the God honest truth. So take that into account. And remember, if you're in the market for a herding breed, be sure to get proper training and make it professional with certifications, good reviews, and all that good stuff. That's my show for today, everybody. Alyssa, thank you for your email. I really appreciate it. Keep those emails coming, ladies and gentlemen. It's one of the most enjoyable aspects of the show for me. Take care.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.